Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
When it comes to tolls, Jane Bird has a question. Do people understand the need for and the cost of transportation infrastructure? Greater Vancouver is recognized as an adolescent region, a fast-growing one that lacks the public transportation infrastructure it needs to get to the next stage in its development as a major Canadian city. To talk about the importance of public transportation infrastructure and how to plan, build, and finance it, we sat down with Jane Bird for a conversation that matters. Jane Bird, welcome to Conversations That Matter.
Thank you for having me.
Interesting time to have you in because it looks like the provincial government is about to announce that they're going to remove tolling on the Portman Highway 1 corridor on the Golden Ears. And basically, they're going to say, we're going to assume that debt. But it raises the question, how do we go about building transportation infrastructure projects and fund them, one, and two, get the social license to do it? Because if we take a look here in British Columbia, we also have the George Massey tunnel replacement project that is coming up against a tremendous amount of pushback from a lot of people who say we don't need it. So how do we go through that process of getting people on side and at the same time navigating our way through the funding mechanisms that are available to us?
Well, I think there's within what you just said, I think there's a few things. So turning first to that concept of the public's understanding and acceptance of the need to replace our aging infrastructure and the need to accommodate a growing population in a narrow environment geographically as we experience in Vancouver. I think it starts with trust, really. It's about creating an environment in which people trust the information they're receiving, they have time to understand what the issues are, mm-hmm. before jumping to the solution. And I think that TransLink's Mobility Pricing Commission, for example, which, as you may know, where they've recently formed to look at this whole question of tolls and other pricing regimes, because it's not just tolls. There's all sorts of mm-hmm. ways to price effectively user fees for the use of transportation and other kinds of infrastructure. I think that's a very good step. There's some very good people on an independent commission that are going to look at the range of possibilities across different cities, what's worked, what hasn't, mm-hmm. to give people the beginnings of an education around what's out there and what we're trying to achieve. And I think in the mandate for that independent commission, there are elements that are important in this conversation. One is that sense of fairness. So I think most people realize that eventually we will be in a situation where some sort of user charge is going to come into play. It's just the price of having the kind of infrastructure we need to have a healthy economy and a healthy environment. Mm-hmm. But people need to feel like it's fair. They need to feel like it's reasonable mm-hmm. for me to have to pay this. And I think there's a couple of things in there. Mm-hmm. One, you know, it's not fair, says someone, that it costs me X dollars to drive in from my municipality when my brother-in-law drives in from his for free. So yes. There's that geographical sense of fairness. Mm-hmm. And then I think as well, there's that sense of, well, wait a minute, you know, if I'm paying for transit, why isn't someone who's driving paying their fair share? So there's this sort of modal fairness as well. And then finally that sense of, well, if I'm paying for something, is it going to be something that is eventually an investment into a better service? Mm-hmm. Or am I paying into that, you know, sort of opaque general revenue? So I think
right.
I think you've touched on something there, mm-hmm. which is to say that we need people to feel that bottom line, they understand why. Mm-hmm. They trust that there's a fairness across users, and they trust that their investment will be sort of paid back to them in the form of better service. I think if we can capture those elements, then we're moving toward a place where that kind of social license that you're referring to, mm-hmm. We have a shot at social license.
But getting that information out in a way that allows them to overcome that, if we can do this,
yeah.
Is going to be tricky because
very
so
hard.
Much of it is, well, who's telling me?
It's very
do
hard.
I trust you for political reasons? Do I trust you because you're from a different municipality within the region? Do I trust you because you want to promote that people get out of their cars and into other forms of transportation? So how do we even get to that point where we start to say, here is a trusted party giving us that information, and we can say, and we can look at it and go, okay, I think that that's valid.
Well, I think you've touched on something that doesn't just apply to transportation infrastructure. We're in this world of that
yes.
very question, just pretty much across the board. And I don't have any magic bullet for that, except I think there are elements. I mean, you're really talking about leadership, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about leadership, and you're talking about an element of leadership, which is having a vision that resonates with people as something that makes sense to them in their daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And then articulating that vision simply and often, and then doing things that are consistent with that vision. So I think it is about leadership. It's about saying, I want to be an elected official because this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then people saying, yeah, that I kind of want that done. Okay. And then I think we have to, and then I do think we have to pick away at it as a track record. So then it's a question of, well, let's just start with one thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do this, we deliver.
Yes.
Then the next thing, we're going to do this, we deliver. And then people start to say, oh, okay. You said you were going to do these 10 things. We just did 1, 2, and 3. Well, I'm going to start to believe that we'll do 4 through 10.
Yeah.
I it's not dramatic, Stu.
Yeah.
But I think that that's really the only way, at the end of the day, to create that kind of trust relationship that will allow people to have the kind of conversation that you're having. And I think you're hearing a lot about social license, and it's an interesting term, but at the end of the day, what it means is a long-term investment in a conversation with the community, whether it be an immediate community in the case of a, you know, building or something,
mm-hmm.
a linear community in the case of the Broadway line,
yeah,
or the broader community in terms of the Lower Mainland or the province or Canada. But it's not a short-term thing, Stu. It's an investment.
Well, I'm thinking about what you just said, and I think about, okay, you know, we had this Pacific Gateway transportation strategy that included rail, road. We looked at the realignment of the Portman Highway 1 corridor, the rebuilding of the Sea to Sky, the connector up to Whistler, and so on. And you look at all these things that were happening, and you'd say, yes, there is a comprehensive plan. Things are coming together.
Yeah.
They're coming together the way that they should. And then all of a sudden, we ran into this roadblock. We have a referendum about how are we going to fund the increase of transportation infrastructure. And now we're running into that same roadblock about the Massey Tunnel. So even though we have that track record, it's as though we get heaped on with other things. And I know that we're kind of sort of stuck on this one point, but I'm recognizing that it's very challenging to get to that point.
It is indeed. I think your observation that the Pacific Gateway strategy, I think that's what we called it, or something around the Pacific Gateway concept, which led to many of those.
Included the bridge at Golden.
Yeah.
Like all that whole twinning
horse,
through Kicking Horse, the whole works.
Sea to Sky, the Bennett Bridge in Kelowna, Canada Line, all of that kind of broader goods and people movement strategy, I think, was really well conceived. It was an example of really good leadership. There was pretty much strong buy-in across the board, the airport, the Board of Trade,
the
labor
unions,
the Port of Vancouver, everybody kind of bought into the vision. And I think we were going strongly and down a path along the lines of what I'm referring to, but it does show you it's hard to keep that momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And whether, you know, I'm not here to judge whether, you know, the mayors might have said, look, we'll figure out a way to pay our share, or whether the province might have been more generous, or whether we should or shouldn't have had a referendum. I think it's an example of how quickly we can lose that momentum if we're not careful. Just to go back to the Mobility Pricing Commission, though, I think that it does have the potential to start again, a bit of a buy-in around a financial vision as to how we might be able to make these investments, create the kind of policy objectives and follow through that you're talking about in terms of modal shift and those kinds of things, as well as engender a sense of fairness. I think it has the potential to kind of reset and allow us to build again.
So, okay, so we hit the reset. What are the things that we have to be looking at? Because you talk about fairness. Let's say I only commute from Delta into Surrey, and I'm looking at all these projects that are, you know, in the works that are taking me into the city of Vancouver or over to the North Shore or something that's going to take me out into the valley, and I go, well, I don't want to be a part of that. Why should I have to fund that? I'm not part of it. How do we get people involved in that discussion and say, you have to trust that we have this comprehensive view? And how do you start to develop it so that it does, you're ensuring that you're meeting the needs of people throughout the region?
Yeah, I think it's about how broadly you draw the painting, because even though you may say, well, what is this bridge, tunnel, transit line going to do for me? I don't take transit, or I don't cross the bridge. But I think it's about really much like happened in the Pacific Gateway. It's about, yes, but you do have an interest in a really well-functioning economy in the Lower Mainland. Mm-hmm. Your kid probably is going to go to UBC or may well go to UBC or SFU, and they're going to care. Your elderly parents are going to need some sort of rideshare program for them to maintain their quality of life. And it's a little bit about the argument, well, I don't have kids in school, so why pay for education?
Right. It's about creating relevancy.
I think it is. That's a really good way to put it. I think it's about drawing, as I said, the picture quite broadly so that people can see their place in it and feel that they are, I think ultimately, though, they do have to feel like they're getting something out of it, even if it isn't direct.
So how do we get them engaged in that discussion? Because so often you can watch people who will diligently do all of this work with fairness in mind. These are committed professionals who are saying, this is our mandate, but we're going to make sure that we do it in a proper manner. And it's only when it's coming down to the decision point does there rise out of the ground this symphony of voices that go, how come nobody ever told me about this? How do we overcome that?
Well, I think public engagement is always challenging, right? I mean, everybody knows how busy they are. Everybody knows what their day is. And whether you're paying attention to the most recent TransLink Mobility Pricing Initiative or taking your kids to summer camp or soccer is a pretty reasonable trade-off for many people. There's no magic in this. It is about the kind of thing we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. It's about an intense, deep public engagement to reach out to people through social media, through traditional means. And it is about eventually saying, we think we've had a broad enough conversation where the majority of people or a significant number of people think we're going in the right direction. And then it's about leadership. Mm-hmm. It's not about, I mean, you're not going to ever have, I mean, we're having more of a political science, almost philosophical conversation about how democracy works.
But, at the moment, yes.
But I think really at the end of the day, having done a diligent job of public engagement, and I think we know what that looks like broadly.
Well, how did you manage to get through that in building, you know, that line down Canby Street where you created a tremendous amount of disruption? What was the key to being able to get people? And of course, even still, not everybody did, but there was enough buy-in to say, ultimately, I think this is going to be for our greater good. What was the key to being able to get that through?
Well, first of all, it did take us 4 years till we got on the ground, so it wasn't sort of an overnight thing. And in retrospect, it feels like it was smooth, but it was bumpy.
Right. So patience
Patience is key. I think it was an intense amount of community engagement. There was a lot of conversations. I remember the very, very first sort of public engagement was, do you want to build a line in the North-South Corridor before 2010 or later? Mm-hmm. I remember that. I remember writing that out in my little one-room office way in the beginning of time, way before we even started developing Canada Line. And because the question was not if we're going to build a north-south line. I mean, just look at Richmond, look at the airport, look at the amount of density.
People are
sensible. They kind of go, right, I think we need some more capacity. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew that you couldn't build another bridge over the river because you just end up in the residential community of Marpole.
Yes.
That wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a broad kind of common sense understanding, as there is today in the Broadway corridor, as there is today in Surrey, look, we got to do this. So then it was just a question of, guys, we're either going to be done by the Olympics or we'll
postpone
it and start later and be done by 2017. The vast majority of people said, do this now. And we use the old tried and true way of doing it in focus groups. You've done this through your whole career, starting in focus groups and getting a sense of what people were thinking and then testing it in a more quantitative way. And people said, do it now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we know what we're generally going to do. Mm-hmm. Then we just build on that. And then it was, well, what? What are we trying to achieve? Are we trying to achieve a local service within Vancouver? Are we trying to achieve a service within between Vancouver and Richmond? Or are we trying to build an airport service? Or are we trying to do both? Mm-hmm. Answer, trying to do both. And we just kind of incrementally built the conversation in the community till broadly people said, yeah, you know what, just get on with it.
Yeah.
But it is incremental. It's sort of like, do we want to have a transportation plan? Yes. Should it cover goods and people movement? Yes. What is the overall time frame? X. Are we prepared to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
Are we prepared to pay for it? Yes, we are. What are the tools that we have available to do that? These ones.
So it appears clear to me that when we look in an urban setting like the Greater Vancouver area, the days of the car ruling where we're going to go with transportation infrastructure are starting to diminish. Mm-hmm. It's as though the consensus is, no, we don't need to build bigger bridges any longer because we're not going to fill them up because we want to get people out of the car. How important is that we, to us, that we start to focus on alternative forms of transportation outside of the automobile, the single occupant automobile?
It's fundamental.
Yeah.
Absolutely fundamental. I mean, we're not suggesting that people aren't going to drive. We're just suggesting they're probably not going to drive to and from work 5 days a week.
For free on the roads, even though it's not entirely for free.
But if you look at the cities that are livable in the world, the cities that people love to be in, whether it's to visit or to live, all of those cities have cars, but they also have fantastic usually subway systems, usually some sort of grade separated system. They also have fantastic streetcar systems. They also have fantastic bikeways. And they also have some fantastic buses. So when you think about the cities, when you think around the world, where what city do I want to go to? What city is my very favorite city to be in the world? And, you know, even pick
New York.
Check. You know, London.
Yeah.
Would you like to go on the tube? Would you like to take a cab? Would you like to drive? Probably not.
Yeah.
Would you like to take a bus? Would you like to take a above ground train? All available to you.
Right. And Paris, so, Moscow, on and on and on. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So if Vancouver is going to be a big city and be a livable city and preserve the environment that we have around us, the answer is pretty clear. We have to build enough alternative modes to have the car not be people's first or only choice. That's really clear.
So,
and that's a massive investment in public transit.
Yes, it is. And so then it comes down to how do we pay for it?
Correct.
You know, there's a few different models. The government can just pay for it. We can have public-private partnerships, or we could have private. But it doesn't look like there's one answer or size fits all for any project.
No, I'll give you an example. So Canada Line, as you might know, is a public-private partnership. So it's a partnership that was designed so the private sector and the public sector invested money. And it's was a design, build, operate, maintain contract. So the private sector was charged with creating a design that would suit the public sector objectives, building it, operating it for a length of time, and maintaining it during that time. And then it reverts back to government. So what government owns
the
bricks
of the
concession, it's called, the term, right? And then it reverts back to government ownership. And the government can decide they can operate it from there or they can lease it to an operator again.
That's called a life cycle principle, is it?
Yeah, it's a life cycle principle. Yeah. The theory being that the guy who's got responsibility to operate and maintain it over multiple decades is going to build it well.
Yes.
Right? It's just a kind of commercial.
Because they don't want to be paying for it down the
correct.
Line.
Yeah. Correct. Now, I have a slight bias, of course, but I think it's been very successful as a commercial model. People seem to like it. Mm-hmm. They get very, very high customer satisfaction ratings. The operator seems to be doing a great job. No one really cares who operates. They just care that it works beautifully and they can get to work.
Right.
Check.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at the Broadway extension, it's quite, not quite different, but it is different. Canada Line tees into an existing rapid transit line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a separate service.
Yes.
Because you remember when you get to Waterfront,
you've got to get off and walk across.
Right. Yeah. Whereas Broadway is going to be a continuation of the existing Millennium Line.
Yeah.
Right? From Clark Drive west along Broadway.
Okay.
So it would make sense that it would become part of the existing system. So you might do a design build, but you probably aren't going to do a design build operate because it's integrated within the existing system, which is operated by TransLink.
Yes.
So that's just an example of your point, which is you kind of got to, you've kind of got to tailor make your solution to the particular issue.
I've noted that in doing a little bit of research here around the world, they're asking these same questions, from Russia to Finland to you name it. Everybody's looking at how do we move people, and then how do we pay for it.
Everybody's got the same problem, mm-hmm. and in fact, some of the older cities that you're talking about, you know, London, for example. I mean, we have an immediate problem in the sense we're behind on our public transit investment. We don't really have a fully complete mm-hmm. rapid transit system. We're getting there, but we really need the Broadway line. We really need the Surrey investment, right? Mm-hmm. But I think they have that problem. But the older cities also have such aging infrastructure.
Right.
When you think of how old the tube is and how old the lines are in Paris and some of these older cities.
And in New York, I take a look at them and I go,
it's a compounded problem
smokes.
Of severely aging infrastructure.
Yeah.
As well as the need for new, at least we're just a teenager city, mm-hmm. An adolescent city.
But ultimately, it is going to come down to a user pay system at some level.
You're
in your car or not, you're going to be paying an additional amount every time you move.
Some element of the payment for this expansion is going to come from users, whether mm-hmm. it be in the case of transit riders, mm-hmm. in the case of roads, road users. There's a piece of it. My theory would be, yeah. I think, pretty well founded that some element of it is going to be some sort of revenue source from users. Yeah.
Right. And so if we take a look at the example of the inner city of London or Singapore, mm-hmm. you want to drive into the city, you're going to be charged the moment you cross a certain intersection right. and you're now in the core of the city. It's costing you to have your car there. Mm-hmm. And so despite the fact that we're going to be dismissing tolls at the moment on the Portman Highway 1 corridor.
I don't think tolls are going away, but they may be combined with congestion pricing.
With growing populations and greater density, this is going to be one of the biggest issues that we're going to be facing for a long time to come.
No question about it.
Yeah.
But I think there's lots of reasons to be optimistic, because I think when you talk to people, you talk to your neighbors, you talk to your kids, most people get that we really need to expand the transit system. I think the majority of people know they have to pay for it one way or the other. Most people realize this doesn't come for free. They just need to know that it's generally fair-minded,
yep.
that it's generally going to where they want it to go,
yep.
i.e. improvements to the system, and that by and large, there's an interest in developing a high-quality experience for their investment.
I think you're right. Jane Bird, thank you very much for this conversation.
You're welcome.